information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
We're sorry. We're experiencing telecommunication breakdown. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 218 from Media Monarchy. It's Friday the 13th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Today, follow the leader for Friday the 13th. New World next week, national-level exercise and domestic surveillance, Skype sellout, celestial battles in cyberspace war, sorcery, Scientology, and holy hexes, plus our not necessarily the news purge with drug war, econo crash, and police state updates. All that and so much more. May, Friday the 13th, 2011, episode 218 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Follow the leader. They got you on the rhythm.
myself. It's a reflection of me, but it's you. Oh yeah, you all alone. Losing this game still won me the bronze. I'll sell both our tickets, we'll sit on the lawns. And hey, be cool for the interview. I don't recall the question, but clearly the answer was you.
Chris, Jay, Patrick, Andrew, that is the band known as Sloan. Brand new music from the Halifax, Nova Scotia band, released their 10th album and celebrating their 20th anniversary. The record is called The Double Cross XX for 20. And those were the first two cuts off the record. Follow the Leader and The Answer Is You. And they have quite the knack for sequencing the tracks, running one into the other, which makes for a great classic kind of LP listening experience, but can also make it difficult for radio programmers. I saw the debut video from Sloan called Underwhelmed in 1992 in high school. 120 minutes was pretty much one of the main things I had going, turning me on to new music. That was the Sunday night at midnight show on MTV that actually played lots of alternative, quote-unquote, stuff. Right as the alterna wave was beginning to rise and crest. But I saw Underwhelmed, loved the song, ran out, bought the tape. And Sloan were actually, first couple records, they were on Geffen. You may even remember some of the compilations at the time, because Geffen had Beck, Sonic Youth, Nirvana. And Sloan were on some of those comps. But they never quite made it, never quite broke through in the States. And they've, for 20 years, basically been one of my secret favorite bands that no one really seems to know about. But anytime I take the time to try and turn people onto them, they become fans. If you're a fan of well-written, beatly, power pop, all the members write and sing, so they switch around a lot. I love them. You should check them out. Sloan, they're hitting the road for their new record. They will be in Portland here in just a few weeks, so I'm stoked to see them for my sixth time. But my friends, it's Friday the 13th, and so far it is living up to its rep. It's May 13th, 2011. This is episode 218 from MediaMonarchy.com, like I said, but let me welcome you formally, as there's not a whole lot of formality going on in this episode. This one almost didn't happen, as everything kind of conspires against me. Oh, woe is me. But when we're dependent on the computer gods, it can all fall apart pretty friggin' quickly. But we're coming to you, broadcasting live and recording live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority since October 2005, praradio.org. And a huge thanks to the folks that carry this show live, zeropointradio.com worldwide. And they also blasted out 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming. And the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Huge thanks to them as well, all the other stations that help spread the word about the show. And I would throw out, not exactly sure who is playing or who is not playing the show anymore. So if you are, or if you have been, or if you want to, drop me a line, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Thanks to my man Jeff at radio23.org for the extra hosting. And of course, when they're working, we're on any number of the social network polls, FaceBase, TwitterTube, and like I said, Gmail is the email. Skype,
boom,
gobbled up. Another one bites the dust. However, thankfully, we do want to thank our most recent donors. Again, thanks to Ryan in Phoenix. And again, thanks to Barbara on the Barbary Coast of California. Their support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing. Please hit the donate button if you find this show valuable in any way. And we appreciate all your help, all your support, all your news tips. And all of those things do wonders and constantly amaze me and humble me. So if we look at the breaking news right now, it's Charlie Sheen, Osama bin Laden, and Ron Paul. Pakistanis cast doubt on Taliban's role in bin Laden revenge attack. The Pakistani Taliban claimed responsibility for an attack avenging Osama's death today, but local police doubt that the Taliban was directly involved or that revenge was the main motive. Meanwhile, Ron Paul launches 2012 presidential run in the spirit of liberty. Texas Representative Ron Paul announced Friday officially that he will run for the GOP nomination for president in 2012, the third attempt for the man known on Capitol Hill as Dr. No. Longtime listeners may know we were quite supportive of Ron Paul in 2007 and 8. And while we are supportive now, I don't know that the excitement is quite there. However, this could be even be a far more successful run. Who's to say? But running under the GOP banner is a double-edged sword. You're running in the main team, and that'll get you the main attention. But you're running on the main team. The phony conservative side of the fake political paradigm. U.S. envoy to Middle East resigns. Former U.S. Senator George Mitchell resigning as Obama administration's Mideast envoy. And we'll keep an eye on the breaking news as we try and make sense of any of it. So, yes, our opening line wasn't really a quote from anything, as most of our openings are. But yeah, we're sorry. We're experiencing telecommunication breakdown. Blogger, the Google-owned free blog service, and that's how I run all my websites. I run it free off of those, because you can host and post unlimited. I don't have to worry about any kind of server space there. I just buy the .coms and redirect those. So, this should be probably a wake-up call for me to not be so dependent and have all my stuff on Blogger. But then what? I have my own server and then something will go wrong with GoDaddy. So, this is always a reminder that we have very little control over any of this. And it could all plop apart and we wouldn't be able to do anything about it. So even this morning as I'm trying to, and always refreshing Blogger to see if it's going to come back online, because in the chaos, and I suppose I could pull up a news story and read it to you, but basically they're down. They've been down for going on 24 hours now. So not only was I not able to post the last blast of posts to Media Monarchy, Cyberspace War, Food World Order, and Holy Hexes, not only do all those posts not get out there, in dealing with their telecommunication breakdown, they also pulled posts from the previous day. So things I even had now aren't there. But I did have the bright idea while our intro music was playing that some of them are actually cached on the Facebook Media Monarchy page. Good God. Are we also dependent on all this? I suppose we are. I suppose I am. We have to, I think, admit it. We're just going to go back maybe to, how about we go to the Media Monarchy ham radio and mimeographed newsletters. We'll go steampunk style. And hell, who knows? We may really have to do that. But enough about the telecommunication breakdown. There's more than enough fantastic new alternative media coming out from Media Monarchy, as well as the fantastic folks I'm lucky enough to be associated with. But last Sunday, for Mother's Day, that's here in the States, one of our numerous holidays that used to actually mean something for social, political justice, and now just means spend money and be angry all about it because it's this thing you have to do. So in honor of that, we published Media Monarchy Mixtape number 9, and we called it 13 Women, an all-female set of music for Mother's Day with music by Best Coast, Those Darlins, Dresden Dolls, The Go Team, Aaron McEwen, Nico Case, Yola Tango, Nelly Mackay. Because it can't be news and politics all the time. So that mixtape is 1 hour. And as many of you may or not know, I come from a college radio background, a sound design background. I love putting together multi-track pieces of music and media. And we'll continue to do it, and probably continue to do it a lot more as we shift with the movements and the changes and the growth that Media Monarchy is going through and will continue to go through as we bust through and get bigger and better and morph as a transmorphing clownomorph. Astute listeners may realize we called this mixtape 13 Women, one, because it's actually 13 female artists. The math actually works out. But it's also a callback to the previous mixtape that opened with a track called 13 Women from Bill Haley and the Comets. Or Bill Haley and his Comets. In that mixtape, 8, all about a wave of mutilation and enviro-nuclear catastrophe. So every mixtape is going to have some kind of thematic core to it. And like I say, hopefully you dig it half as much as I dig it. And folks were asking for it, and I meant to do it, but again, so many things. 2 weeks ago, on April 29th, the day of the royal rituals, you may recall episode 216 opened with a 15-minute clip of my conversation with Tracy Twyman on the Necro Nuptials. I published the entire interview. It runs about a half hour, including the Dance in the Court of King Arthur music from Excalibur. It runs about a half hour, and it's the entire interview with Tracy Twyman on the morning of the wedding, and she and I had both separately watched the streams of it, and that was about 3:30 a.m. Pacific time, so we held that conversation at about 6:30 that morning, so it was breaking, it was hot, and amazing stuff you weren't going to hear anywhere else. That entire interview is up. We've also now published over on youtube.com/Media Monarchy, which, as far as I can tell right now, is up and running. I put together the video companions for my recent appearance on the Bob Tuscan Show. Going to be a guest, and have been for the last couple of months. First Wednesday of every month on Oracle Broadcasting. I shoot video at home, and then I try and put it together and throw some text and some pictures in there, and you can watch me gesture wildly. Just another way to try and spread this kind of information out. Audio, video, text, any kind of way. So those videos are now on the front page of youtube.com/Media Monarchy. In the latest episode of PeaceRevolution.org, episode 26, Exposing the Folly of an American Theater of the Absurd, features the entire talk between myself and Richard Grove that you only heard an excerpt from on last week's episode 217, discussing the Obsama psychological operations that are still currently ongoing. Huge thanks to Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com for not only including our entire conversation, I think, which runs about 40, 45 minutes, within this new episode 26 from PeaceRevolution.org that gets into all the surrounding questions provided on this post on Media Monarchy as well as PeaceRevolution.org. The documentation list for this episode is necessary. And I think that's got to be one of the many reasons why I love being connected to TragedyandHope.com and CorbettReport.com. It's the reference list. It's the bibliographies. I think all of us try and take that little bit of extra work and provide the links for you. Is it always comprehensive? No. Sometimes it's not possible. A lot of times it's not possible. But it's taking that extra step to provide all that kind of information. I'm not sure I think it was somebody in the chat room last week on ZeroPointRadio.com now we're going to have... We're going to have musical telecommunication breakdown here. You're pushing me, baby. As I shake my fist at God. What was I saying? Last week, somebody was asking about the music beds. And they said, I wish you would say what those are. And I was able to provide the link and say, I do, always, every week. All that kind of information is going to be in the show notes. So the songs we hear, the videos we hear clips from, the articles we cite, the posts, all those things are available in my show notes. And I love that Grove and Corbett and those folks do the same thing. So I implore you, and I a guy at work, we've been talking about stuff, and we got into a lot of it, talking about kicking the Alex Jones habit. That I know, many of us have been there. I'm here to tell you, my friends, I've been there myself. You know, probably, I hope you know, we don't play the Patriot games. We don't spend time attacking other hosts and who I like, and he's an agent, and yada yada. Alex Jones turned me on to the broader picture surrounding 9/11, which is how I got into all of this in the middle of doing radio programming and playing drums and doing sound design. Starting to study alternative history, 9/11, JFK, it spread out to everything else. Anyway, episode 26 from PeaceRevolution.org, Exposing the Folly of an American Theater of the Absurd, includes our entire conversation, as well as the subtext and the context, and the Council on Foreign Relations articles from 1998 that begin to set the stage for this mythical Osama bin Laden, which we'll touch on in a little while. And I'm sure there was a point back in there somewhere, but we've lost the thread. Again, my friends, we apologize. We're experiencing telecommunication breakdown. But as we stand on the brink of the age of spiritual machines, are we as a society ready to face the consequences of our creation, or even to understand what those consequences are? Episode 185 from CorbettReport.com unpacks the marvels and the horrors of Kurzweil's Law of Accelerating Returns. Episode 185, The Singularity Cometh. We also have the latest Sunday update on the Osama deception. Another great piece from CorbettReport.com. Again, fantastic work. And I fortunately now remember the point I was going to make a few minutes ago. Kicking the Alex Jones habit, my friends. I was talking to a guy at work, and he's been trying to kick the Alex Jones habit. And I was kind of explaining, yeah, in a way, it kind of keeps you coming back for more because it can be fear-based. The information is good, and I get still a lot of news from the InfoWars organization. But listening to 3-4 hours of his show every day will... I don't know. So, in trying to help and trying to provide links to, you know, hey, check this out. You know, I find I like this. I was doing the same thing until I started to get into some of these other areas. So I basically sent him a message that contained the subscription links to Webster Tarpley's World Crisis Radio. There's a commercial-free feed of his weekly podcast. So the commercials are cut out, and it only runs for about 80 minutes. World Crisis Radio is a fantastic breakdown on the geopolitical scene, with the fantastic historical aspects and analysis that Tarpley does. So I gave him a subscription link to that show. I gave him a subscription link to NewWorldNextWeek.com, my weekly video series with James Corbett. A link to, of course, Media Monarchy. feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. Shove that up your iTunes, put that in your feed reader, and you won't miss a thing, assuming we has internets. I can has internets. But I also included Peace Revolution in the subscription feed, but I think I maybe even said, here's Project Constellation. Read this and listen to this first. Then move on to a podcast called 9/11 Synchronicity. And then we'll catch up on PeaceRevolution.org, which is now episode 26. So as we start to move into the other areas of the news, I just want to again extend a huge thanks and a humbled feeling to the fine work from those hosts that I'm lucky enough to be associated with. Like my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org, we do have his latest episodes and articles, but they are in the blogger telecommunication breakdown limbo. Basically, what's going to happen, and as I said, this episode almost didn't happen, I almost just slept on the couch. And I thank my girlfriend for getting me up, because she knows that I would have been angry later at myself if I would have missed it. Plus, it would have just made a hell of a lot more work for me later to have to go over this, plus all the things that aren't included on the page right now. We're going to have to cover those on a B-side. Good grief. So the third story on the most recent New World Next Week .com, and we've gotten amazing downloads on my archive.org pages for New World Next Week. James has his whole server that have the episodes. We upload them to YouTube. We upload them to blip.tv, and I upload them to archive.org, where I upload all of my audio and video. For whatever reason, I'm not sure where the traffic is coming from, but my New World Next Week archive has gone insane. And, for example, the April 29th episode on the 9/11 hijack running on empty and the God particle, I have 7,130 downloads listed. Which is amazing. I have no idea where that's all coming from. I even told James about it, and we were like, whoa. So add that into the tens of thousands of views they get on YouTube, and I don't know how many people are watching it on Sky Satellite TV, thanks to ParadigmShift.tv. There's no real way to track where all this information is going. Just as we said at the beginning, there's no real way to fight through when telecommunication breakdown occurs. And there have been many things going on. I hope we've at least read a headline into the record about the Sony PlayStation debacle, and their whole network, I think, is still screwed. And this blogger outage seems to coincide with them doing upgrades, but they said that was just a coincidence. But yeah, ultimately, if these things go down, what are we going to do? That's the question to ask. So the final story we go over on the most recent NewWorldNextWeek.com, FEMA DHS running National Level Exercise 2011 beginning May 16th and running through the 20th, facilitated by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The National Level Exercise 2011, NLE 2011, scheduled for 16 to the 20th of May. The purpose for the exercise is to prepare and coordinate a multiple jurisdictional integrated response to a national catastrophic event, with focus on response and recovery activities among federal, regional, state, tribal, local, and private sector participants. NLE 2011 will simulate, it's only a simulation, the catastrophic nature of a major earthquake in the central United States region of the New Madrid seismic zone. Coincidentally, the year 2011 is the bicentennial anniversary of the 1811 New Madrid earthquake, for which the New Madrid seismic zone is named. NLE 2011 will be the first national-level exercise to simulate a natural hazard. And we provide the flashback links to our previous years of coverage of National Level Exercise 2009 and 2010. And it's basically the continuation of the top-off set of terror drills. And the most recent, as I come to you, last week's May 7th episode of World Crisis Radio from tarpley.net gives such a great overview of the current geopolitical situation, from the Osama, Obama, to the drills, to the economics, to the world stage. But NLE is essentially the continuation of Top Off, which was canceled. And Portland, Oregon knows a thing or two about Top Off and the strange activities that happen when you have Homeland Security, and all its tentacles. And then you have private military contracting firms with their darker tentacles coming together. Things can go live, as they did at Top Off here in Portland. All bomb residue on a white vehicle right near where Blackjack says a white vehicle would explode in Portland, Oregon. You may recall Operation Blackjack, something myself and Clyde Lewis have discussed both together and separately in the past. So many things going on all over the country, and we see these military exercises moving into place where there's already activity. I guess it was the A&E version of Michael Crichton's Andromeda Strain that I watched recently. It's basically like a 4-hour movie. And within that, when the asteroid crash occurs, and of course there's the outbreak from that because they brought down the alien virus on this satellite, they bring in a military outfit and say that it's just routine exercises. Which makes you wonder how many times that may be going on all around their very ears. So there are drills going on. I can look up in the sky on my way here to the show and see lots of great jet trails, as there have been over the Pacific Northwest quite a bit. So we'll continue to watch all that, and that's all I can say as we shift gears slightly. But another story that we cover on the most recent NewWorldNextWeek.com, Microsoft's $8 billion Skype deal shocks analysts and disappoints users who wish cool companies wouldn't continue to sell out to multinational corporations that have intelligence connections. Microsoft closed an $8.5 billion deal for the internet phone service Skype in a deal that has shocked analysts who think it would be a substantial overpayment for the company.
It's software giant Microsoft's biggest deal in its 36-year history, buying popular internet phone service Skype. Microsoft announced it's paying $8.5 billion for the Luxembourg-based company, which has been losing money. But Microsoft is not necessarily looking for immediate financial returns. It's Skype's technology and its loyal following that they're after, as well as getting ahead of Google in the booming market for internet communications. Skype users logged on and made 207 billion minutes of voice and video calls last year alone.
The person whom you're trying to reach.
That's a potential market for Microsoft's Windows and Office software, and a potential link up with its Xbox game system.
Skype is a phenomenal brand, even though it doesn't make money. Lots and lots and lots of people use it. It is now a generic word, the way, you know, Google and Scotch tape is. I'm going to Skype you.
Joining us now via Skype from Cairo.
Broadcasters frequently use Skype as a cheap and easy way to bring in guests and reports from remote locations.
So for the over 100 million consumers and business people who use Skype to call family, friends, colleagues, and clients on the other side of the world, or in just the next room, how does this deal affect them?
One of the big concerns that some people have is whether or not Microsoft will continue to support the platforms which aren't Windows.
And that includes products from rival Apple. It's unlikely that Microsoft will scrap Skype as it's now known.
Microsoft has a reputation, unfounded or not, of buying companies and stripping them, getting the personnel, eliminating them so they could put out their less than good version without any competition. I can't imagine that their purpose in buying Skype is to eliminate Skype.
So Skype is here to stay, but the question remains, will you be able to use it on all of your devices in the future? Scott Heidler, Al Jazeera, New York.
Buy them out, boys. Another hyper-global CompuMegaNet goes down. So it's quite the theme that this all weaves. Is it just me? Or I see the connection between the Skype and Microsoft and Google and Blogger and all of these things coalescing. And that can make the analogy of why we need sovereignty on state levels and an argument against global governance. Is if all power is connected at the top, it can all go bad with a flick of a switch, with a flick of a kill switch, if you will, and not having the protections. Let's continue on cyberspacewar.com. Domestic Surveillance Court approved all 1,506 surveillance warrants in 2010. This from Threat Level, the secretive Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA, or FISC, approved all 1,506 government requests to electronically monitor suspected agents of a foreign power or terrorist on U.S. soil last year, according to a Justice Department report released under the Freedom of Information Act, with the PDF download link for you. The two-page report, which shows about a 13% increase in the number of applications for electronic surveillance between 2009 and 10, was obtained by the Federation of American Scientists and published last Friday. The FISC did not deny any applications in whole or in part, according to the April 19th report to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. The 11-member court denied two of 1,329 applications for domestic intelligence surveillance in 2009. The FBI is the primary agency for making those requests. Whether the FISA court, whose business is conducted behind closed doors, is rubber stamping the request is a matter of debate. The Justice Department report, meanwhile, said the FBI issued 24,287 national security letter requests last year on 14,212 people, a substantial increase from the 2009 level of 14,788 NSL requests. That comes from Stephen Aftergood writing on the FAS secrecy blog, FAS.org. In 2008, there were 24,744 requests regarding 7,225 people. That's a lot of numbers, but all you need to add is 2 and 2. And when we manage to get our latest cyberspace war post up, we'll get into GPS monitoring and tracking. Although that may come up in our police state updates as well. Telecommunication breakdown is all I can say. Some of our other things in the cyberspace war world. Get into the secret diary of Admiral Richard E. Byrd. Land Beyond the Poles, a story dating back to 1947. Two posts going together. The missing secret diary of Admiral Byrd. I must always say admirable. The dreaded rear admirable. The secret diary of Byrd, fact or fiction. This gets into Operation High Jump. And so many other stories that my man Alan in Omaha gets into on cyberspacewar.com, such as the Celestian battle, or rather the Celestial battle, Babylonian epic of creation. As now my own mouth is having telecommunication breakdown. But the Nazi UFO mythos lives on in a recent article at The Sun, Close Encounters of the Third Reich. The article takes the opportunity to report on Iron Sky, a movie about Nazi UFOs presently in production, to recount evidence for the real thing. This is something I've seen, again, Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org discuss in lectures in person with slideshows and photos and video and audio. Adolf Hitler wanted to bomb New York City, and Nazi UFOs were part of the plan. Author Joseph P. Farrell, who I know I've heard speak on Red Ice Radio many times, firmly believes UFOs trace back to Germany and written extensively in support of that argument. There is this strange story going back to, you know, decades pre-Nazis. And I think it's, again, this isn't something that I'm well steeped in, which is why I'm glad that cyberspace war can get into some of these things that we've discussed and seen, and you can still learn about on groundzeromedia.org, such as asking the question, what lies beyond event horizon of a black hole? But there was something called the Vril, I believe, some kind of early supposed UFO connection with Germany, and then that technology progressed, and then that's what the Nazis were using, and then that's why Operation Paperclip brought those guys over, so we could begin NASA, and we could begin JPL, Jack Parsons Laboratory, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and their connections to occultists like Aleister Crowley and their Babylon working experiments that they were attempting out in the desert. It's all intimately connected. So I asked the question, I kind of threw it in there in the middle, what lies beyond event horizon of a black hole? Advanced astrophysicists don't have to be dry or boring. Dan Evans, an MIT researcher, will stimulate the imagination by considering an article at the Daily Galaxy, dailygalaxy.com, what lies beyond the event horizon of a black hole. Evans suggests the radio-loud active galactic nuclei, or black hole, at the center of most observed galaxies emit perpendicular jets, and it's in the amazing photo. There's also a 2008 Universe Today article that gets further into it. And it brings us right back to what we said is the latest episode from CorbettReport.com. The singularity cometh. We'll now move to the latest site within the media monarchy kingdom, holyhexes.com. Ahmadinejad allies charged with sorcery. Iranian power struggle between president and supreme leader sees arrest and claims of undue influence of chief of staff. Close allies of Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, have been accused of using supernatural powers to further his policies amid an increasingly bitter power struggle between him and the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Several people said to be close to the president and his chief of staff, Esfandiar Rahim Mashey, have been arrested in recent days and charged with being magicians and invoking jinns. Looks like djinns, D-J-I-N-N-S, or spirits. An Iranian news website described one of the arrested men, Abbas Ghaffari, as, quote, a man with special skills in metaphysics and connections with the unknown worlds. And what crazy conspiracy theory sites does this come from? The Guardian. Raw story. Al Jazeera. Sorcery. On a completely different note, but we see these connections. And I don't have to search out for strange goings on. It's all becoming quite apparent. There is disclosure going on seemingly on a number of levels. And let's ask the important question. Did John Travolta convert Lindsay Lohan to Scientology?
What do John Travolta, Tom Cruise, and Peaches Geldof have in common? They're all members of the controversial religion, Scientology. And looks like Lindsay Lohan may be the latest recruit. Because word is, John suggested Lilo give it a go in the hope that it may help get her slightly skew-whiff career back on track. The two are both signed up to star in new movie, Gossy: Three Generations. And according to reports, when producers were hesitant in hiring Lindsay because of, you know, her recent troubles with drugs, driving and necklaces, John assured them he'd taken Lindsay under his wing and felt pretty confident he could keep her on the straight and narrow. Apparently, Lilo's now pinky promised John that she'll attend a Church of Scientology induction course.
This just in, Lindsay Lohan has denied news reports linking her to Scientology. Earlier reports widely circulated on the internet claiming that her gaudy co-star, 57-year-old actor John Travolta, induced the troubled actress into entering for an induction course with top Scientology counselors. Sources close to the 24-year-old actress denied the reports. Scientology will gobble you up. That's how cults and schemers and scammers and psychic vampires work. They see people in a state of dis-ease on whatever level that may be, and they scoot on in next to you. Slither on down the vine, if you will. Whatever analogy you want. I think we do this kind of work for a number of reasons in being passionate about it. As we say, don't hate the media, become the media. That's been my rallying cry since I've heard it from Jello Biafra on a spoken word record 15, 20 years ago. I always thought, aha, that's it. I hadn't quite fleshed it out. I haven't quite fleshed it out now. But I've constantly tried to move in that direction. I think we do this kind of work within the bad news so that we can become more informed, so that we can make better decisions, so that when we all get a text message at once from the president saying, oh my God, panic, that we'll maybe have a revelation. Everything else seems to be pushing for a freak-out violent revolution. So before we digress too far, we'll close up with our last piece on holyhexes.com. Egypt officially requests Germany to return the Nefertiti bust. Minister of Antiquities Zahi Hawass said that he would send the German government an official request next week to return the Nefertiti bust that is displayed in the Egyptian Museum of Berlin. We have documented proof that the bust was illegally smuggled out of Egypt, he said, adding that he is confident Egypt would bring it back, even if it takes a long time. We would also like to request the Metropolitan Museum in New York to return those 19 items that belong to the treasure of King Tutankhamun. You'll see these stories when engineered geopolitical strife breaks down. You'll see little blips about antiquities raided or looted or damaged. And we've already done it several times, kind of covertly, but let's just overtly mention the curse of the fighting, flying, hellfish episode of The Simpsons where they get the Nazi loot and all go into an agreement to hide it. Resources. In a way, you can maybe even connect how we go into on the Microsoft buying Skype story on the latest newworldnextweek.com. It is that psychic vampirism. It is that, as I say, you know, the constant buying up of upstart independent things. Why compete when you can just buy things out? Sounds like great capitalism to me. But the same way that you'll see the connections and the endorsements, maybe even in the greatest movie ever sold, you see soulless multinational corporations whose only interest is the bottom line and making their shareholders happy. You'll see them sidle up to things within the real people and their art and their music and their stories. And they align themselves with it. You can watch episodes from Douglas Rushkoff on Frontline, Merchants of Cool, The Persuaders, getting into sort of the Cool Hunters and the branding of things. But we digress again. We have one post to hit on foodworldorder.com, but of course there is one in the pipe, so to speak. The new kosher is for everyone, from Food Freedom. On a road trip, one stop at a service station brings home the brutality of what corporations have done to food in the U.S. Standing in a U.S. service station unable to find anything to eat, the predicament of Orthodox Jews who keep kosher and can only eat at home or with those sharing the same dietary principles comes to mind. It's suddenly shockingly clear. All genetically engineered non-food is treif. What is treif? Or trife? T-R-E-I-F? Traditionally, anything that is considered vile and non-kosher in the Hebrew faith. Contemporarily, something dirty and nasty you don't want around, much less want to consume or touch. The new kosher is to eat only normal food and avoid mutant GE food. That avoidance has been happening already, but until now, it hadn't been given a descriptive name. The new kosher. Again, more on that from foodfreedom.wordpress.com, and that is our only post to go into on Food World Order right now. As I say, there's more in the pipeline. But we're just about at the top of the hour of this episode 218 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's Friday the 13th. Living up to its reputation, May 13th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Let's take a little musical break, shall we? Sons and Daughters, Come In Out of the Rain. a B-side from one of the singles off their 2005 record, The Repulsion Box. That's the fantastic Scottish band known as Sons and Daughters with the track Come In Out of the Rain. Like I said, they came out in 2005 and they were already calling it. President's talking about change, but no one's got sense enough to come in out of the rain. And yes, Changeluia would come just a few short years later. Sons and Daughters also have a track on our latest Media Monarchy mixtape, number 9, 13 Women. Again, if you subscribe to feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, you won't miss a thing. That link is on the top right of the page with a little RSS icon. You know, the little orange thing that looks like the little waves coming out of it? That's the icon to subscribe to things. I'm not trying to talk down to you, but I have had people ask, like, what's RSS? It means really simple syndication. Again, my friends, we're into hour number 2 of episode 218 on Friday the 13th, May 2011. I'm James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Pakistan Taliban strikes to avenge Osama's death. Ron Paul launches 2012 presidential run, and George Mitchell resigning as U.S. Middle East envoy. Those and other stories in the breaking news on this Friday the 13th morning. The remainder of the episode is cobbled together from one, I was lucky enough to save a notepad version of the news purge that was supposed to go up yesterday, the May 12th news purge. Follow the leader on MediaMonarchy.com. But as we've noted at the top of the show, we're sorry, we're experiencing telecommunication breakdown, and Blogger, the service that I run all of my websites off of, has been down for now about 24 hours. So all those posts will be forthcoming, but I was able to cobble together some of the things that aren't yet posted, as well some of the things that were that Blogger yanked while they're dealing with gremlins. So hopefully, as many of you are listening to this episode, and again, we say welcome wherever you are in the world, however you get this episode, however you receive these transmissions, we welcome you with open arms, and I'm humbled constantly by the comments and the interactions and the donations and the gifts and the news tips and all the things from all the folks out there who help Media Monarchy grow and grow and go. So it's the May 12th news purge. Follow the leader. We'll begin with the drug war. Dad's secret THC treatment cures his 2-year-old son's brain cancer.
Federal agents in Spokane raided several medical marijuana dispensaries today, enforcing federal law that makes selling or possessing marijuana illegal. But for some families, that drug is a godsend in treating a variety of diseases. 2-year-old Cash Hyde was diagnosed last year with a stage 4 brain tumor. He nearly died more times than his family can count and was miserable from the high-dose chemo coursing through his tiny body until his dad turned to a controversial place and gave cannabis to his young son. KXLY4's Melissa Luck is here, been working on this story.
The controversial, Robin, is an understatement. Medical marijuana is a political football both here in Washington and in Cassie's home state of Montana. But his father said to me, when your child is dying of cancer, you'll do anything you can to help. His choice defied doctors, and he says saved Cashy's life.
Cashy did his last round of high-dose chemo with no anti-nausea drugs. Mike says the doctors told him they were amazed. Mike never told them why.
I wanted to tell him, hey, he's on cannabis oil, but I was afraid they would take it away from him.
We wanted to tell you about the side effects, the possible dangers of giving medical marijuana to a kid as young as Cashy. But even though it's perfectly legal in Washington and in his home state of Montana, we couldn't get a single doctor to talk to us on camera. That's how we ended up here at the THC clinic in East Spokane.
And I see a lot of folks, and they come in from all walks of life and say they receive benefit.
Sherry Allen is a nurse practitioner from Oregon. She comes to Spokane every couple of weeks to evaluate medical marijuana patients and sign off on their permits.
What I try to do here at this office is create an atmosphere that is truly medical, because I do believe that cannabis is a medical, and we are trying to use it as a medicine.
She believes in the power of this drug and its benefit for cancer patients. She signs off sometimes on 50 patients a day. Then I asked her about authorizing marijuana for kids.
It is not common. Okay. And I'm not going to say whether or not I've authorized for a child.
It's a typical answer, as doctors are concerned about federal law and company policies. But Mike Hyde doesn't care about the controversy or about the political battle over this drug. He cares that his son survived and is convinced not only did the cannabis oil make Cashy feel better, it prevented long-term damage to his organs. For Mike, the living proof is in his vibrant 2-year-old boy.
Yeah, it's very controversial. It's very scary. But there's nothing more scary than about losing your child.
A week after we did this interview, Cashy was back in Salt Lake for scans, finding out he's cancer-free. He's back home in Missoula, back with his family, back to teasing his big brother, Colby. Cashy will spend his third birthday like every kid should, with the fight of his life behind him.
And the state of Montana estimates that of the 28,000 medical marijuana patients in the state, 51 are kids under the age of 18. And Robin, we try to get those numbers from Washington, but our state does not track who has medical marijuana permits, who's allowed to get them. It's just simply not tracked, so we have no idea here in Washington.
And after today's raids, we kind of understand that it might be even longer before we have any more answers.
That's right, and that's something that we talked to the Hydes about at the time. We did this interview a couple of weeks ago, And that's the one thing Mike said, whether you agree with it or not, every time they take down one of these dispensaries, there might be a kid or someone in a hospital somewhere that depends on it. So everybody involved just wants the government and the jurisdictions to just get sorted out.
Mm-hmm. And you can make comments on this story and let us know what you think on KXLY.com later tonight. Thanks so much. Well, Cash's family got tremendous support from friends, family, and strangers during his treatment. Now they're paying it forward. The Cash Hyde Foundation raises money and provides things like these reggae runners to children's hospitals. They donated several to Sacred Heart Children's Hospital earlier this month. Vehicles are outfitted with IV poles so kids undergoing treatment can get out of the rooms and have a little fun.
Our other main story on our drug war updates is we're just beginning here, the news purge for May 12th. Follow the leader. That was Dad's secret THC treatment curing his 2-year-old son's brain cancer. And we also want to make the reference to a new show called Remedy Radio from my man Paul Verge of not only DivergentFilms.com, but of the TragedyAndHope.com community. He has started a new podcast, vodcast series, and I believe one of the recent episodes says it just like that clip did, how hemp can save the world. I believe we're also going to be a guest on an upcoming episode of Remedy Radio, if we can break through our telecommunication breakdown. The other clip: thousands march in Mexico City to protest the drug war.
Thousands turn out to demand an end to the violence and an end to their president's war on drugs. Citizens, many dressed in white to symbolize peace, are also demanding an end to corruption in local, state, and federal governments. They want those responsible for committing widespread murders across Mexico punished. Mexican President Felipe Calderón's war on powerful drug trafficking organizations has gone on for more than 4 years, and it has come at a high cost. More than 34,000 people have already been killed, a growing number of them innocent civilians. With the cries for justice echoing in the street, President Felipe Calderón has gone on the defensive, exalting his beleaguered countrymen to continue supporting this fight against drug traffickers, a policy on which Calderón has staked his presidency.
We Mexicans are confronting powerful enemies that aim to impose their own rules, do away with our liberty, and do away with the free institutions that we have built over time.
This well-known poet has suffered direct consequences from this battle. In Cuernavaca, a city just south of the capital, his own son was tortured, then murdered in drug-related violence. That high-profile death helped spark this protest movement.
There are those who say we want to destroy the country's institutions. No, the institutions are already destroyed. We want to remake this nation.
As you can see, frustrations are running high here in Mexico City. Protests are taking place simultaneously in other parts of the country, including southern Chiapas state, where the Zapatista indigenous rebels have joined into the protest, demanding more citizen participation in the country's political life.
Some observers say Sunday's protest rally signals the birth of a vast new social movement.
Historically, across the world, major social changes have begun this way, peacefully. Hopefully, our people will not be forced towards the next step, taking power on its own.
And that's something the president definitely does not want to see happen. So he'll most likely continue doing everything possible to show his doubting countrymen that this war is still worth fighting. Frank Contreras, Al Jazeera, Mexico City.
And I'd like to think that we could at least count on the fact that among the many things that a President Ron Paul would get rid of, the war on drugs would be very high on the list. So yes, cannabis, hemp could save the world. I want to make a quick note of something that caught my eye as, again, trying to cobble together some of the cached feeds of some of our stories that were lost on Blogger during their telecommunication breakdown. I want to say what's up to Chris Murphy at work getting his media monarchy on. Interestingly enough, Chris Murphy from Halifax, Nova Scotia is not the Chris Murphy that's in the band Sloan from Halifax, Nova Scotia. But hello nonetheless, and welcome to the show, and thank you for spreading the word. Continuing the Follow the Leader news purge, Galleon billionaire Raj Rajaratnam, convicted of hedge fund fraud, and conspiracy.
The headlines call him a Wall Street titan. Galleon Group founder Raj Rajaratnam has been convicted on all 14 counts against him by a federal jury. MSNBC has more.
Rajaratnam has been convicted on 14 counts of conspiracy and securities fraud in what prosecutors call the largest insider trading case ever involving hedge funds. Federal prosecutors accused the former hedge fund magnate of making more than $60 million in illegal profits by trading on information given to him by a crew of corporate tipsters.
Rajaratnam, once called one of Wall Street's savviest investors, was indicted based on what the New York Times calls, quote, powerful wiretap evidence. Federal agents secretly recorded his telephone conversations over a nine-month stretch in 2008. They listened in as Mr. Rajaratnam brazenly and matter-of-factly swapped insider stock tips with corporate insiders and fellow traders. Mr. Rajaratnam's lawyers argued that all of this supposed illegal trading was grounded in publicly available newspaper articles, analyst reports, and company news releases. But Forbes adds, the case against the investor goes well beyond the wiretap evidence. First, there were a number of former friends and associates that chose to testify against Rajaratnam. Second, those that did testify for the prosecution had credibility. Third, there were clearly defined moments of insider trading. Fourth, a majority of the defense witnesses had all received some form of payment from Rajaratnam, thus cutting to their credibility. The business media acknowledged this probably isn't going to be the last time we hear from Rajaratnam. An appeal could very well be on the way. But CNBC asked, what new evidence could we possibly hear with an appeal?
When a wiretap is given, the agents listening to the taped conversations, they're live at the time and they're taping it, are supposed to minimize the conversation. So if there's a conversation, if Rajaratnam is talking to his wife, they're supposed to listen in, realize it's his wife, turn the tape off,
right,
stop listening, come back 2 minutes later, listen again, etc. If he's talking to his lawyer, they're not allowed to listen to that. If they and they keep a log about this. There's been a suggestion by the defense that they did not abide by these minimization rules.
Finally, a white-collar crime expert from Duke University tells The Guardian, while it's good to see the Justice Department aggressively pursuing insider trading cases, the bigger picture still needs some addressing. Let's not get away from the fact that this had nothing to do with the credit crisis. Neither Rajaratnam nor Madoff had a damn thing to do with that, and there are still real questions to be asked about who is responsible for the credit crisis. Rajaratnam faces as many as 20 years in prison on each of those 14 convictions, and his sentencing is scheduled for July 29th of this year. Until then, he's going to remain free on bail with a tracking device. Jan Seals for Newsy.com. Multiple sources. The real story.
hedge fund fraud and conspiracy. Now, isn't it interesting to note that conspiracy is generally used by folks in the mainstream in the pejorative, as in conspiracy theory, to bat down something they don't want to discuss? But it's important to note, it's generally the number one charge you'll see going on in the federal courts. You have to take, after you've done the research, and I think you'll make it there and see, you have to take the standpoint and the viewpoint of the conspiratorial view of history. It's the only one that shakes out. That was also a clip from the, as I've said before, I believe, the underrated newsy.com. And if you guys are hiring, let me know. Our other EconoCrash updates, Sheila Bair steps down as the head of the FDIC, having helped oversee bankster bailouts and the controlled demolition of Washington Mutual. Yet another critter scurries away. Their job is done. They are the birdcage liner. They'll take the crap. We can swap them out. They'll have a sweet book deal and they can move into the private sector. The agenda rolls forward. Postal Service reports billions in losses. And our final two EconoCrash notes, as Obama says, immigration reform is an economic imperative. The economiccollapseblog.com has 18 reasons why illegal immigration is an absolute nightmare for the U.S. economy, and we will not go through those 18 facts. But I was having a conversation with someone at work the other day who I think was talking about his, you know, conservative Fox News reactionary friend who wants to build a big, huge fence. And I said, don't you think a fence to keep people out would probably just keep us in? And he was like, yeah, I bet he never thought of that. Noting he had never thought of that himself either. And it always comes back to the economics. If we had a stronger economic base, you know, based on, you know, like making stuff that, other people would like to buy. Yeah. Yeah, that industrial base that's been destroyed, that's been shipped overseas. If we had a stronger economic system, but again, it was set up to fail. It's set up for fraud. It's set up to implode on purpose. Debt ceiling or not. It's fiat currency run by a private central bank that is not federal, and there are no reserves. Is that something else that could be brought to the floor by a President Ron Paul? Probably. We move to our geopolitics updates on this news purge, and it's essentially all of our Obama PSYOP updates. And the bottom does provide the flashback to last week's massive data dump on the May Day Obama PSYOP. But we have, of course, as you would expect, further and further and further revelations like this one. CIA agents live next door to Osama.
Riveting new information on who bin Laden's neighbors were. It turns out the CIA was living right next door in Pakistan, watching bin Laden's every move. Nick Schifrin has been tracking all of this down in Abbottabad, Pakistan, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Nick.
Elizabeth, that's right. New details about an extraordinary spy mission in the months before this raid. It turns out Osama bin Laden had secret neighbors, the CIA. The CIA moved every asset it had into a house right near bin Laden's compound. Those assets included a satellite hovering above, telephoto lenses on cameras that actually shot bin Laden's compound through mirrored glass, infrared devices, and audio recording devices. Those details, according to the New York Times and Washington Post, the newspapers say that effort took more than $10 million. But in the end, it actually failed. The CIA never got a positive identification of bin Laden. They saw someone in the compound they nicknamed Pacer, but they never identified him, nor were they able to actually get his voice, record his voice. And that goes to show you how well hidden he was in this compound. And also how well disciplined he was. The fact is, he never left the compound and risked any kind of exposure.
Oh, is that really the story? What a surprise. In these suspicious, massive events, we'll always kind of see a lot of the same occurrences and a lot of the similar stories, and that sounds exactly like CIA agents knew who all the 9/11 hijackers were because they were living next door to them or they lived with FBI informants and all of those things. So we go from that revelation to a reverse, as Obama said in an interview. I believe it's on the 60 Minutes interview. I was not able to extract the pertinent clip because their video is embedded in a way I couldn't get it out and I gave up. But the quote is, "We could not say definitively that bin Laden was there." And you also heard that previous clip just say the same thing. But as the Los Angeles Times reports, Osama's death, now a part of Obama's rebirth, re-elect message, like a phoenix from the ashes, like a junkie needs a fix, wag the dog and you'll get that little bit of pull boost. What about all those folks going off the unemployment rolls? Anyway, Tarpley.net getting into the bin Laden brainwash psyop, seeking to, one, establish a fake treasure trove of terabytes to target U.S. adversaries worldwide, and, of course, the growing momentum towards a false flag attack to be blamed on Pakistan via al-Qaeda. That and so many other things. As I said, the most recent episode, May 7th, from World Crisis Radio really gives a broad overview of a lot of the situations going on in the world. And going along with it, this treasure trove of terabytes, U.S. seized bin Laden journal, all of these videos and all of these other things have all been supposedly coming out. And I saw on the breaking news a little bit ago that, oh, of course, the Navy SEALs had digital cameras on their heads, so there's video of everything. But we won't get to see that. Osama's giant bounty will not be paid. Of course it won't. Because it's interesting to note, as we always do, that 9/11 was never on bin Laden's most wanted poster anyway. But as the questions rise, we can see right in Pakistan, and we've had folks say, that's not Osama bin Laden, that's my neighbor.
Actually, apparently we believe that Osama bin Laden was here and he was killed during the operation conducted by the American Marines.
There are a number of contradictory theories and speculations emerging from Osama bin Laden's death as to how and why was this operation conducted in a certain way.
The locals in the neighborhood say that the operation led by the United States military was a complete hoax. They say that if President Obama knew about the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden, then why wasn't the Pakistan military informed? And then why wasn't this operation carried out by the Pakistani military? These are the questions that need to be answered by the United States of America. Daniel Khan, CCTV, Abbottabad, Northwest Pakistan.
An image the White House wants the world to see. Apparently a disheveled and much diminished Osama bin Laden watching himself on TV. The footage was edited by the Pentagon and released without sound. It's said to be one of five videos found in bin Laden's compound. The image was front page news in Pakistan today, but in Abbottabad, where he met his end, there was plenty of skepticism. It's all a fake. Nothing happened, said Muhammad, who's been selling newspapers here for 50 years. Shabir says it's a case of mistaken identity. He claims the man in the picture is his neighbor.
His name is Akbar Khan. He owns the house, they said, was Osama's house. I know him very well.
If the aim was to persuade the doubters, it didn't work here.
This picture is not Osama. This picture.
It is very suspicious and it is made by advanced technology.
Made by computer.
By computer, yeah, ma'am.
We've now spoken to more than 50 people in the market, and only one believes that the man in the video watching television was, in fact, Osama bin Laden. People here say the Americans haven't proven anything. They haven't shown bin Laden's dead body. Many still don't believe that the al-Qaeda leader was living here or that he was killed here. It's unclear when and where the videos were made. Tonight, President Obama said bin Laden must have had some sort of support network in Pakistan, perhaps involving people in government, which must be investigated. Orla Guerin, BBC News, Abbottabad.
The videos apparently show they have maybe this, but there's no audio, there's no photo, there's no video, there's no evidence shown now. There was no evidence shown before. The Taliban said, if you show us evidence, we'll hand over bin Laden. Bush said no. And of course, Bush is a puppet. Obama is a puppet. They're the shadows on the wall. These guys don't run squat. But unfortunately, they're the players on the stage that we have to kind of comment on. And we're just trying to write the playbill here for you, if you will. And it all happened on occult holidays, and it was all swirling around with the retirement of Gates, and this all connects to the grand chessboard that Brzezinski writes about. And even if you don't want to get into the occult twilight language angle, like I've said on all my most recent appearances on Night Vision Radio and on the Bob Tuscan Show on New World Next Week and other places, even if you don't want to get into the occult angle, all you got to do is say, well, we funded and trained these guys. Even if you look at his writings, he said, it's because you guys want to run over the Middle East. And it's blowback. And they let the bin Ladens fly out of the country because they were Bush business partners connected to James Bath through their global networks. But let's not digress too much, friends. We still have more geopolitical Obama PSYOP updates with an interesting bit in the video. I think got quite a bit of coverage. I won't use the overused phrase of how it spread. Was Obama passing secret messages with a general right before the bin Laden raid?
We can see him, that's President Obama, going to Cape Canaveral after being to Alabama. He gets down with his daughter, he puts his hand in his pocket, you see, and he takes something out of his pocket, and he puts it in the other hand. He shakes his hand, his right hand, with General Wilson, and then with the other hand, you see the exchange once again. He gives him something. And General gives him another piece of paper. See, look what Obama is doing. He turns around. He turns around, and you see the next shot here. Very easily, he takes this piece of paper. You can see it very well. He takes it and puts it in his pocket. In his pocket. So the possibility that happened 2 hours after the statement by Obama himself of giving the order of taking action against Osama bin Laden, this is a general of the U.S. Air Force, Ed Wilson, and it literally seems that they are exchanging information through a piece of papers. It is very clear there.
This is somewhat apocryphal, and I'm not sure where the video comes from, but we do have coverage from The Telegraph, as well as just the clip off of YouTube. Yes, they exchange something. Digs into his pocket, hands it to dude. Dude digs into his pocket, hands something back. Was it secret messages being exchanged between the head of the military with the military head? Or was it just a challenge coin, as some defenders have claimed? We give the link to you over to Wikipedia, and you can read about challenge coins, something that are exchanged within the military. And I saw this in the comments from someone, a lover of the Obama-Saya. And of course, now the left love Obama-Saya and his warmongering ways. So it just seems they were never really against war in the first place. They were just against the GOP-run wars. But now that it's their guy, they're okay with it. They're okay with intervention in Libya, and they're okay with extrajudicial assassination without evidence, pre or post. A clip from Raw Story notes, ex-crony, former chief of staff with Colin Powell, said Bush didn't even want to get Osama. Meanwhile, top doctor confirms Osama had Marfan syndrome, which is why his number two guy was always a doctor. As we've pretty much maintained, bin Laden's most likely been dead since December 2001. And if the raids in Tora Bora of the war that, of course, was already being planned and prepared pre-9/11 with the offer of a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. And then after 9/11, if the bombs didn't get him the kidney dialysis or Marfan's did. But let's get a little video flashback. In the days, I believe this is just September 12th or 13th, 2001, with, of course, disgraced Dan Rather. And all of these angles we get into in a great breakdown on the most recent Peace Revolution, episode 26, featuring my entire conversation with Richard Grove, which you heard an excerpt from last week on episode 217. But let's get a little flashback from the disgraced Dan Rather and CIA veteran Milt Bearden on 9/11 saying Osama is a diversion and not capable of 9/11.
Here now to elaborate and lend more context, the veteran and distinguished CIA officer we met in that report, Milt Bearden. He joins us from our Washington Bureau tonight. Thank you for being with us. What's at stake in the way we respond to these attacks, Mr. Bearden?
Dan, I think just about everything is at stake. There is probably no more important action that the United States will take in the last 40 or 50 years than how we handle retribution and retaliation for what happened yesterday in New York and in Washington.
Well, if the president should come to you and ask you, what do you think I should do, what would you tell him?
I'd tell him, first off, steady as she goes. The president has the most complete backing of the American people that I've seen in 40 years of public service. He's got a Congress that is totally behind him. He's not troubled with extraneous problems. He can focus, go steady as she goes, focus on finding out who did this thing yesterday and then dealing with it in a way that will not bring yet more troubles to us.
Well, it's pretty obvious that a judgment is coalescing around the president that it was Osama bin Laden.
I know we live in a country where we're often told that the first thing that comes to your mind, put it down, put the little mark in there. I feel slightly uncomfortable because I spent so many years wondering how the myth of Osama bin Laden got started. We have the Osama bin Laden who was the great war hero in Afghanistan. We have Osama bin Laden who was trained by CIA, funded and supported by CIA during 3 years of war. I was there at the same time bin Laden was there. He was not the great warrior that went and fought the Soviet Union to a standstill. CIA had nothing to do with him. I think that mythological Osama bin Laden, never mind that he's an absolutely evil man, but the mythological Osama bin Laden causes me trouble, and I think maybe there is another answer out there. I'm not certain that I know what it is.
So we heard it in there. That was September 12th. That was a CIA guy saying, I don't think bin Laden could or did do this. But our last update that we have posted related to the Obama PSYOP, Michelle Bachmann and other lawmakers see bin Laden photos convinced, quote, we got our man, end quote. Extensive porn stash reportedly found in bin Laden compound. That, my friends, just now as I turned back to breaking news to see if there was any other that we could tie in. We have that 36 minutes ago from Fox News and The Guardian. Pornography found in Osama bin Laden hideout, U.S. officials claim. So the ongoing psychological operation to sort of destroy the reputation post-destroying the physical, or at least writing him out of the story. This guy will not come back. He won't pop up in the shower like Patrick Duffy. They're moving him off the show. They're continuing to degrade him. Even though, you know, we could have done this in a court of law for the world to see in a proper manner, but no. So again, my friends, we provide the flashback to last week's massive post covering the Obama PSYOP. Mayday, Obama announces the death of a Bush business partner. One note of history mystery, we'll try and add in a couple more once we break through our telecommunication breakdown, but our only history mystery note right now, the ongoing, and it seems all around the world, there are people being picked up for war crimes, but it's the low-level people that get burned for it. Now, of course, yes, they tacitly other or otherwise went along with it, just like the people we saw in Oregon and Kentucky recently being arrested for their Bosnian war crimes. They're always going to roll over the lower-level people. Just watch your gangster movies to see how the banksters and the multi-generational serial killers roll. Just because you think you go along with it, you think you're a part of the team, doesn't mean they're not going to whack you when it starts to break down, because they are, and they will. Demjanjuk, or Demjanjuk, convicted for his role in Nazi death camp, I guess the third time's the charm, bringing him to trial. Our media meme notes, a couple of obituaries, and an odd note, and a little musical interlude in between. Dana Winter, that's W-Y-N-T-R, the lead actress from the fantastic original Don Siegel version of the Jack Finney story, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Dana Winter passes away at the age of 79. She makes it almost all the way through the film, where then at the end you see the great break from the main idea in the story is that the pod people get you when you fall asleep. She just blinks her eyes and turns into a different thing without having to be swapped out by a pod. That huge plot hole aside, the original Invasion, as well even the Donald Sutherland version, and the year and director escapes me. I think it may be Kaufman. But I also even watched, and I think I noted it on here, the most recent version, which ultimately isn't very good, but ties in the more of the post-9/11 biolab Fort Detrick kind of military police state angle of the invasion story. All that digression aside, our other note in Media Meme is the obituary note of John Walker of the Walker Brothers, has died at the age of 67. Hopefully, some of you may know of the amazing singer-songwriter Scott Walker, who is still around to this day. He was a member of the UK band, the Walker Brothers, and here is their 1966 hit, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine No More.
Emptiness is a place you're
with apologies for the sound quality on that, unless, of course, I fix it in post-production, in which case you just heard a higher quality version of the 1966 song from the Walker Brothers, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore. That, of course, goes along well with Coming Out of the Rain from Sons and Daughters. But that was the Walker Brothers. And, of course, as we noted, John Walker, 67, has passed away. Our last media meme note, Lady Gaga plus Farmville equals Gagaville, or as the writer Erica Morphy on Forbes says, New World Order for Virtual Goods. Our murder and mayhem notes, German-born playboy Gunter Sachs kills himself at the age of 78. More on that from the BBC. The New York Times gets into the identification of a fifth victim as police now raising the possibility of a second that could be copycat Long Island serial killer. And the final murder and mayhem note sums it up quite nicely as the mass murder contagion seems to spread. And that, again, that's the thing within films like The Andromeda Strain and The Invasion. It is a mass murder contagion of unknown origin. South Carolina teen charged with killing his mom on Mother's Day. More on that from the Washington Times. Some of our related Obama-Saya updates and other Congress critter goings-on. Obama seeking Congress okay for the FBI chief to stay. As other security chiefs shift, the Obama-Saya wants Robert Mueller to stay on for continuity. More on that from the Christian Science Monitor and GoErie.com. Meanwhile, Ethics Committee refers the John Ensign case to the Justice Department. Another resignation in shame. Meanwhile, Newt Gingrich changes dynamics of the presidential field despite his Twitter launch fail of his presidential candidacy. However, someone who doesn't have a lot of social, cultural, skeleton-in-the-closet kind of baggage, because if he had any, they'd have printed it and touted it by now. I guess we'll have to brace ourselves to see what they can make up this time around, but Ron Paul was predicted to announce his presidential candidacy today on Friday the 13th. And yes, he did. On Fox News. For the GOP ticket. Cautiously optimistic. Let's just say that. Our Oregon Oddities begins with a story that is probably by now a week or two old. I saw it first in our own Oregonian with the local report, but this story got picked up and it went national. Woman gets new accent after a dentist visit. Yes, for some reason, she now speaks with a British accent. On a sad note, and we take this from our own Willamette Week, Willie Week, WWeek.com. Portland City Commissioner Randy Leonard's daughter dies of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. That is the latest I have on that. I'm not sure what has come out after that, unfortunately. But our last note in Oregon Oddities, an orange cloud escapes from precision cast parts. That would be in Milwaukee, Oregon, creating a hazmat situation.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Deborah Knapp. Steve is off. It's been unfolding for more than 5 hours of the precision cast parts on Johnson Creek Boulevard and the surrounding area. We have live team coverage tonight, beginning with KTU's Anita Cassay, who's live in Milwaukee. Anita?
Well, fire crews are going to be out here all night long, well into tomorrow. Now, we want to make it clear, they are saying that it is safe for the neighbors who live behind this, as long as they're inside their homes. But fire crews say it is too risky for them to go inside this plant and stop the leak. So, essentially, they're just going to let it stop itself, a leak that started with a PGE power outage.
You can't see the chemicals lingering over precision cast parts, but all the fire trucks indicate a serious problem. Dangerous chemicals leaking from this manufacturing plant in Milwaukee.
I had this on my face when I came over, because initially I didn't know what to think.
Robin Gerard thought she got a picture of the chemical cloud.
I think it was orange. It was orangish and it was coming that way, but it seemed to have stopped.
This plant makes structural metal parts and uses a hydrofluoric nitric acid combo to dissolve strong metals. A company spokesperson says a piece of titanium got stuck in a vat after a PGE power outage. That's what triggered the leak and this massive hazmat response.
Normally our action is to ventilate, get it out, but we know kind of what chemicals are in here, so we slow plated a little bit just to say, well, let's slow down. Let's make sure we don't release something we don't want to release.
But as the chemicals built up inside, they eventually leaked, blowing behind the plant toward a neighborhood. Two firefighters and two employees were taken to a hospital with respiratory problems. Others decontaminated in this tent.
Their clothes will be stripped off. They'll be kind of hosed off and then warmed up and probably get to go home.
As for stopping the leak, it's too dangerous to go back inside. Firefighters say it's as simple as letting that piece of titanium shrink until it's completely dissolved, which could take up to 24 hours. That piece of titanium was several hundred pounds. Now, firefighters say were this to have happened on a clear day, this would not be so much of a problem. The chemical just would have gone up into the air and quickly dissipated. But because of our rotten weather and these low clouds, it is keeping that chemical hanging around the neighborhood. As for PGE, they are going to be back out here tomorrow to try to determine what triggered that power outage. Live in Milwaukee, Anita Kasey, K2 News.
A very eventful day in that area. Anita, thank you. K2's Megan Cockstein continues our team coverage. And Meg, people are still being advised to stay inside.
Yeah, Deb, going on about 5 hours now. Clackamas County Fire says initially they did a reverse 911 call to everyone within a half mile from the scene here, telling them that they should stay indoors. We just got word, as Anita said, that this could go on for 12 to 24 more hours.
Ryan Lumnicki lives less than a mile from Precision Cast Parts.
And it just seemed a little bit hazy.
From his kitchen window, he watched the orange chemical cloud rise. He quickly closed the windows after he got word to stay inside.
Does it concern you at all to be stuck indoors, told to have the windows down, doors closed, all that stuff?
It concerns me a little bit. But
firefighters advised everyone within a half mile of the scene to stay indoors, saying the chemical involved is a respiratory irritant.
It was nerve-wracking because I didn't know what that material was, and I didn't know what it could do to you. My mom was very concerned about whether or not we should have the heat pump going.
I got the windows closed. I turned off the ventilation system, the heater.
While most stayed sealed up inside, others hadn't heard the news.
I took a nap, and I came out here, and I decided, well, it's time to walk the dogs before it gets dark, and here I am. So I wasn't even aware that there was any kind of warning like that.
With the warning still in effect and not knowing what was lingering in the air.
Well, I guess that does concern me now that I know it, but better hurry on home, I guess.
Now, as for the rest of the night, firefighters out here are telling us that they're still asking people just to stay inside. Again, if you live within a half mile from here, they say if you do go out, if you're coming back home tonight, that's okay. Just don't linger out front of your home. Just get in as quick as you can. And again, they say this could go up to last for another 24 hours. We're live in Milwaukee. Megan Kostein. K2.
Orange cloud escapes in Milwaukee, Oregon, creating hazmat situation. Now, one on the humorous note, it took me a little while to realize after living here that Oregon has a lot of cities named after other cities that are actually better known and were established first, like Portland or Salem or Albany or Milwaukee. But the other note that kind of goes along with this, and I'm not sure, but I think I read something about, as you know, we're thinking about, you know, hazardous material situations, something about a, you know, complete, full nuclear meltdown. Yeah, whatever. Let's move to our police state updates as we're now running out of time and just going to get through the 512 news purge. Follow the leader. The title Danger Room gives it is, you can take the 9/11 security state from my cold, dead, top secret hands. That is, of course, a reference to Charlton Heston saying you can prize guns from his cold, dead hands. But that's the title of an article referring to Representative Mike Rogers, a Michigan Republican and former FBI agent, speaking to the Council on Foreign Relations in a Wednesday speech, saying, of course, the alleged death of the alleged Osama is going to do nothing to end the 9/11 security state. Will we continue to spy and surveil and molest you while you do nothing about it, and your dollar isn't worth anything, and your food is poison? But hey, apparently something crazy happened on American Idol last night. Obama administration fights to allow for warrantless GPS tracking. That is from allgov.com, and that is not a surprise anymore, as it shouldn't be for you. And as we noted on the latest newworldnextweek.com, the mistake some folks are making is acting like this all started on January 20th, 2009, as if Obama's just crazed with power. No, he's just taking the football that was handed to him from the previous puppet frontman. So the battle brews over FBI's warrantless GPS tracking with an interesting and important and informative piece from Threat Level, how to check your car for a GPS tracker. Meanwhile, four arrested after a suspicious incident at, wouldn't you know it, the New World Airport, the Denver Airport. Meanwhile, Chucky Schumer, not content with a do not fly list, of course, that is selectively enforced. How about the do not ride list for the trains?
It's a glaring loophole, says Senator Schumer.
Anyone, even a member of Al-Qaeda, could purchase a train ticket and board an Amtrak train without so much as a question asked.
Especially now that we know Al-Qaeda was looking to trains as possible targets.
So that's why I'm calling for the creation of an Amtrak no ride list that would take the secure flight program and apply it to Amtrak trains.
Schumer says it's a no-brainer. Amtrak already collects passengers' names, and it could cross-check them with a terror watch list.
At virtually no extra cost.
For subways and commuter trains where riders aren't ticketed by name, Schumer wants more security funding. Alex Silverman, WCBS 880 News.
So Al-Qaeda can just buy a ticket and get on a train, and yes, train security is pretty lax compared to flying. That's why people like it, and that's why the, as we aforementioned, 9/11 security state will need some type of catastrophic catalyzing event to get us to submit to all of this on all our modes of transportation. So after that setup, as things get crazy and as we all get tense and as we're all bracing for retaliation, that'll come from Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, even though the ISI was founded by the CIA, and you can look that up. You can even get it in an infotainment package in a film called Who Killed John O'Neill that gets into the ISI and Daniel Pearl and Osama bin Laden and Omar Sheikh Saeed. But that Schumer Do Not Ride list story sets us up for our last three police state updates that all have to end with an exclamation point because things are just that much insane. An IED was found near Pennsylvania train tracks. That, as well as some of the others, coming from NationalTerrorAlert.com. And note the language. An IED was found near Pennsylvania train tracks. In years past, it probably would have been dumbass kids trying to set off a pipe bomb or playing with fireworks. But now, civilians, as the military nomenclature has taken over, this is an IED. Meanwhile, TSA agents search a baby as a possible terrorist.
A baby gets patted down by the TSA at KCI. A passenger captured the image on his cell phone, and the picture went viral.
This is the picture that has thousands of people talking. Look closely. It appears to be about an eight-month-old baby. TSA agents are hand-searching the baby at KCI Saturday. Kansas City pastor Jacob Jester snapped the shot.
I took the picture because I wouldn't have wanted that to happen to my own son. Not because I was furious, not because I was irate, not because I was getting ready to throw down in the airport, but basically because what I watched, it was something that I wouldn't want to take place to my own son.
Jester tweeted the picture, and in 2 days, more than 200,000 hits.
The mother had to stretch out her arms, hold the child in her arms as they begin to pat down the child. And it mostly looked like they were trying to make sure there was nothing on the child.
Here's what the TSA has to say about it. After the child stroller alarmed during explosive screening, officers followed protocol to conduct additional screening on members of the family who were very cooperative. Jester said he understands and appreciates security measures.
Still, my opinion is that I would wonder why an eight-month-old would be any security threat to this nation.
TSA insisting they will follow security protocol to protect the flying public.
Now, Jester said that he got tweets from people who were angry that a baby would be searched and other tweets from people who support the TSA.
And you'll continue to support the TSA again as long as we can keep you in fear and keep you rattled and make you think that there's a terrorist under every bed or hiding in your washroom. Are there Bolsheviks breeding in your washroom? The final police state update that ends with another exclamation point. Plot to attack New York City synagogues thwarted.
Two men are under arrest accused of plotting a terror attack in New York City. Police say the two were targeting synagogues, and the plot was in the works before Osama bin Laden was killed. Eyewitness reporter Jamie Roth is live now at One Police Plaza with more for us. Jamie.
Lori, no specific synagogues were mentioned in this plot. The men did have guns. They were apparently looking to buy more guns, and that is when they were arrested. The NYPD says the two men in custody were planning a terrorist attack. There are very few details at this hour, but the men were reportedly trying to buy weapons with the idea of staging an attack in Manhattan. The two suspects were arrested by the police department's intelligence division. As with the plots to bomb Kennedy Airport, the Bronx synagogues, and the crowds in Times Square, law enforcement describes this as a homegrown plot. But there's also word that in this case, the two men may be of North African descent. The case is being handled by the Manhattan District Attorney, and the men are expected to be charged under New York State's terrorism law. The NYPD has had its guard up, and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly has warned of just such a danger since the killing of Osama bin Laden.
We were at a heightened state of vigilance in light of what happened to bin Laden. We've kept pretty much in place the extra security that we put in motion last week. And we'll do that. We'll keep it in place and make judgments on a day-to-day basis.
And in this case, the NYPD believes this was a potential threat that they have thwarted. Since 9/11, there have been 12 terror plots against New York City, all thwarted. This one marks number 13. The mayor and the police commissioner will be discussing it this afternoon at City Hall. We're live outside One Police Plaza. Jamie Roth, Channel 7, Eyewitness News.
Oh, the 13th homegrown terror bust in New York happens on Friday the 13th. What a coincidence. Now, there are so many things within that clip to break down, but we don't have time to do it. But note the mention of homegrown terrorism, of course, always being done by some low-level dupe and patsy who, when promised with a bunch of money and funds from undercover feds, they'll end up doing something stupid in some sort of Oswald-like fashion. Not to get into that whole nest. But it also shows, again, we're mentioning Al-Qaeda from North Africa. Pinning it again, coming out of that area, AQIM, watch out. Or watch out for terror from the new Pakistan boogeyman, Al-Awlaki. You know, that guy that dined at the White House a couple of months ago? Quickly finishing off the news purge, one note on war horrors, again from Danger Room. Rare earth woes could mean trouble for U.S. stealth fleet. Yes, bizarre, rare resources are used to fund the war machine. We are spending our very life force and source to kill and destroy. And that's why it ultimately can't and won't go on. West Virginia Worry closes out the news purge. A WVU study, that's West Virginia University out of Morgantown, West Virginia. People living near mountaintop mining sites have poorer health. And our last note from the Los Angeles Times, families of dead miners feel let down by Washington. None of these things should be a surprise, and they're not, but we have to read them into the record. We have to go over it. We have to kind of spread this information so we can make better decisions. Forewarned is forearmed. Running out of time, we'll quickly note, of course, yes, our telecommunication breakdown. Blogger is down, experiencing technical difficulties with the web all around. Who knows what may be next, but there is so much more news yet to come. As soon as it all gets worked out, it'll all be blasting out on MediaMonarchy.com as well as our family of sites in the kingdom, FoodWorldOrder.com, CyberspaceWar.com, and HolyHexes.com. More to come on the massive flooding as well as, oh yeah, that nuclear meltdown that's happening just across the ocean. The emergency alert plan coming to your smartphone. All that and so much more, my friends, will be coming soon from MediaMonarchy.com. This has been the Friday the 13th, May 2011 episode 218 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not or operate it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.